Welcome to Akhotra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI. Welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we're stepping into a world that feels both distant and strikingly familiar. We're exploring Nathaniel Hawthorne's incredible novel, The Scarlet Letter, a romance. This is really a cornerstone of American literature. And Hawthorne himself, well, his story is almost as fascinating as the book. He's born in Salem, Massachusetts.
Right, Salem. You can't really talk about Hawthorne without mentioning Salem and the whole Puritan legacy, especially the witch trials. His own ancestors were involved.
Exactly. And that history, that sort of inherited guilt, it just permeates his writing. It puts him squarely in that American dark romanticism camp. They weren't afraid to look at the darker side of human nature. Sin, guilt.
Mm-hmm. Unlike the transcendentalists, who are maybe a bit more optimistic, Hawthorne dives right into the shadows.
And his style reflects that. It's quite formal, very intricate prose, but it's packed with symbolism, allegory. It's deeply psychological. And The Scarlet Letter, published 1850, is, I think most would agree, his masterpiece.
Absolutely. Even that introduction, the Custom House, kind of sets the stage for this deep introspection.
It does. And it was controversial, you know, tackling adultery, hypocrisy in the church. But it was also a huge success. People were drawn to that honesty, I think.
Definitely. It dared to look behind that very pious facade.
So, okay, let's get into it. What's the core story we encounter right at the beginning?
Well, picture this. Mid-17th century Puritan Boston. It's a society governed by these really strict moral and civil laws. Everything is judged.
A very rigid world.
Extremely. And the story throws us right in. No gentle introduction. We see a young woman, Hester Prynne, emerging from the town prison. She's holding a baby, Pearl.
And everyone's staring.
Everyone. Yeah. But it's not just the baby. On her dress, she's wearing this incredibly detailed embroidered scarlet letter A.
B-A.
For adultery. Precisely. It's her punishment, her public badge of shame. She has to stand on a scaffold, endure hours of humiliation, people demanding she name the baby's father.
But she doesn't.
No. With this amazing, quiet dignity, she refuses. She takes the whole weight of it herself.
So right away, it's not just about the act itself, but the consequences, the shame.
Exactly. It's less a mystery of who did it and more about the psychological fallout on three key lives. Hester, obviously, her secret lover, who turns out to be the town's revered minister, Arthur Dimmesdale. And then there's her husband.
Her husband. I thought he was lost at sea.
That's what Hester believed. But he reappears, seemingly out of nowhere, adopts the name Roger Chillingworth, and becomes obsessed with finding Hester's lover to exact his revenge.
Wow, so you've got public shame, hidden guilt, and secret revenge all tangled up.
It's a potent mix. And it forces you, the reader, to think. What's worse, carrying that A for everyone to see, or hiding a sin deep inside where it just eats away at you?
That contrast is set up so quickly, isn't it? The outward mark versus the inward agony.
Right, from those first few chapters, we see Hester on that scaffold, enduring it all, and then that chilling moment, she sees him in the crowd.
Chillingworth, her husband.
Yes. He makes this subtle gesture, telling her to keep quiet. Later, he visits her in prison, introduces himself as Chillingworth, a physician.
And makes her a promise.
Makes her swear never to reveal who he really is, and he, in turn, swears he will find the man who wronged them both.
So the tension just ratchets up immediately. Hester's public burden versus Chillingworth's secret consuming quest. It really makes you question the nature of punishment.
It absolutely does. And then the story jumps forward. 7 years pass.
7 years. That's a long time to live with these secrets.
It is. Hester and Pearl live in this little cottage on the edge of town, sort of isolated. Hester becomes a really talented seamstress. That's how she supports them. But she's still an outcast. The A ensures that.
And Pearl, what's she like?
Pearl is. Well, she's fascinating. She's described as wild, beautiful, almost otherworldly, very perceptive. She's like a living embodiment of the Scarlet Letter itself, a constant, sometimes unsettling reminder of Hester's sin.
So no escaping it, even in her own child.
Not at all. Meanwhile, Chillingworth, the physician, has cleverly worked his way into the community's trust. He becomes the personal doctor and confidant to Reverend Dimmesdale, who's been suffering from this mysterious declining health.
Ah, the secret lover.
The very same. Chillingworth suspects the illness isn't just physical. He senses a deep spiritual sickness, a hidden guilt. So he moves in with Dimmesdale, supposedly to care for him.
But really.
Really, to begin this slow, insidious psychological torture, he's like a parasite feeding on Dimmesdale's soul.
And Dimmesdale is just wasting away.
Yes. His guilt is literally consuming him. He gets physically weaker. He keeps his hand over his heart. He even performs these secret acts of penance, like whipping himself in private.
Trying to atone in secret.
Right. And one night, in utter agony, he goes to the scaffold himself, under the cover of darkness, stands where Hester stood.
A secret confession to the night air.
Kind of. And by chance, Hester and Pearl see him there. They join him. And just then, a meteor flashes across the sky.
The meteor.
Yeah. And some interpret its shape as giant letter A up in the heavens. Like, nature itself is reflecting their shared fin. And who's watching from the shadows?
Chillingworth, of course.
Of course. He sees them together.
This is where Hawthorne's psychological insight just floors me. You see Hester suffering openly, but somehow growing stronger, more resilient through it.
Mm-hmm. There's a strange kind of integrity in her open suffering.
Whereas Dimmesdale, hiding his secret, revered by everyone, is just crumbling from the inside out. There's that amazing line Hawthorne writes.
Oh, I know the one you mean. No man, for any considerable period, can wear one face to himself and another to the multitude.
Without finally getting bewildered as to which may be the true. It perfectly captures Dimmesdale's state, doesn't it?
Absolutely. He's trapped. The lie is destroying him more profoundly than any public exposure might have. The effort of maintaining that facade, the hypocrisy, it corrodes the soul.
It really shows how secrecy can be more damaging than the sin itself.
Hawthorne definitely suggests that. The unconfessed guilt is the true poison here.
So after this scaffold scene, things must start shifting again.
They do. Another 7 years have passed by the time we reach the next major section. Hester, remarkably, has earned a kind of grudging respect through her quiet charity work and her strength.
So the A is changing meaning.
For some people, yes. They start saying it stands for able or even angel. She's endured so much. But she sees Dimmesdale just deteriorating under Chillingworth's constant care.
She knows what Chillingworth is doing.
She does. And she decides she has to intervene. She confronts Chillingworth first, begs him to stop his torment.
Does he listen?
No. He's too far gone. He admits he's basically become a fiend, totally consumed by his need for revenge. He can't stop.
So Hester has to warn Dimmesdale herself.
Yes. She arranges to meet him secretly, out in the forest, away from the town's prying eyes.
The forest that feels significant.
It is. It represents nature, truth, freedom, a contrast to the repressive town. And there she tells him everything. Who Chillingworth really is.
Has Dimmesdale take it?
He's horrified, initially angry at Hester for keeping the secret, but then it's also liberating. The truth is out between them. Hester urges him, let's escape. We can go to Europe, start over, just us and Pearl.
A moment of hope?
A huge moment. And in this burst of passion and possibility, Hester does something radical. She unpins the scarlet letter and throws it down, lets her hair down.
She sheds the shame.
For a moment, yes. She looks like her old self again, vibrant and beautiful. But then they call Pearl over.
And Pearl.
Pearl doesn't recognize her mother without the A. She points at Hester's chest, demands she put it back on. It's heartbreaking.
Wow. So even the child insists on the symbol.
It's like the symbol has become Hester's identity, even to her own daughter. Hester, feeling this sense of doom, picks it up and pins it back on. The dream of escape just shatters.
That scene in the forest... It says so much. Nature offers freedom, but can you really escape the past, the consequences, just by taking off a symbol?
It raises that exact question. Pearl's reaction suggests maybe you can't, or at least the burden becomes so ingrained it feels like part of you, like Hester realizing she had not known the weight until she felt the freedom.
The freedom highlights the burden she didn't even fully realize she was carrying. So where do they go from there? The escape plan is off.
Dimmesdale returns to town feeling strangely energized, but also tempted by uncharacteristically wicked thoughts. He then delivers this incredibly powerful Election Day sermon. It's seen as his finest hour.
His public piety reaching its peak just as his private life is about to collapse.
Exactly. As the procession leaves the church after the sermon, he sees Hester and Pearl waiting for him near the scaffold.
The scaffold again. It always comes back there.
It's the focal point. And in this final, desperate act of will, Dimmesdale calls Hester and Pearl up onto the scaffold with him, in front of everyone.
He's going to confess.
He does. Leaning on Hester for support, he admits his sin to the stunned crowd. He tears open his shirt.
And reveals.
Reveals a mark on his own chest. Some say it was a self-inflicted A, others that it appeared psychosomatically from his guilt. Whatever it was, it's his own scarlet letter. Pearl finally kisses him, acknowledging him as her father, and then he collapses.
He dies right there.
Dies right there in Hester's arms. He finds his peace, finally, through public confession.
And Chillingworth, what happens to him now that his victim has escaped?
With Dimmesdale dead, Chillingworth's purpose is gone. All that revenge that fueled him, it just evaporates. He visibly withers, loses his energy, and dies within a year.
Consumed by his own hatred.
Completely. Interestingly, he leaves his entire fortune to Pearl.
So Pearl, why?
It's ambiguous. Maybe a final, strange act of connection, or perhaps acknowledging the damage he caused. Hester and Pearl then leave Boston. They just disappear for many years.
But Hester comes back.
Yes. Years later, Hester returns alone. She voluntarily takes up residence in her old cottage and, remarkably, puts the scarlet letter back on.
Voluntarily.
Yes. But now it's different. She becomes this figure of wisdom and solace, especially for other women dealing with sorrow or societal judgment. The A transforms fully into a symbol of her strength, her survival, her quiet dignity.
She defines the symbol. It doesn't define her anymore.
Precisely. And when she dies, she's buried near Dimmesdale. They share a tombstone, but with separate mounds, signifying their connection yet their separation. And the epitaph is just, on a field, sable, the letter A, ghouls.
On a black background, a red A. Simple, powerful.
It sums up the whole story, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
So thinking about the ending, Dimmesdale finds redemption only through that final painful truth. Chillingworth is destroyed by his vengeance. Hawthorne even questions if hatred and love are fundamentally the same thing at their core.
That intense obsession. Yeah, it's a provocative thought.
And Hester. That line, the scarlet letter had not done its office, meaning it hadn't crushed her as intended. That feels like her ultimate victory.
It is. She transcends the punishment. She finds her own path to a kind of grace, not through denial, but through acceptance and strength.
So beyond the plot, what are the big themes Hawthorne is really drilling down on here?
Well, sin and guilt is obviously central, but it's nuanced. It contrasts Hester's public sin, which she ultimately moves beyond, with Dimmesdale's secret sin, which destroys him. The takeaway seems to be that unconfessed guilt is far more corrosive.
Right, and linked to that is the critique of societal judgment and hypocrisy.
Definitely. Puritan Boston is portrayed as incredibly harsh, unforgiving, obsessed with outward appearances while hiding its own secrets and cruelties.
Then there's Hester's journey, individual identity and rebellion. She refuses to let the A define her entirely. She reclaims it in a way. It's a quiet rebellion, but powerful.
A quest for an authentic self against immense pressure. And don't forget nature versus society, the forest as this place of truth and freedom versus the repressive town.
Good point. And the theme of revenge and forgiveness, or rather the lack of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Chillingworth embodies how revenge just eats away at your own humanity.
He literally transforms into a fiend, as the book says, loses himself completely.
And Hawthorne uses such powerful literary tools to convey all this.
Yeah.
The symbolism is just layered everywhere.
Oh, it's incredible. The scarlet letter A itself is the prime example. Adultery, Abel, Angel, its meaning evolves constantly.
Pearl, too, she's more than a character. She's like a living symbol of the sin, but also of nature and truth.
Exactly. And the scaffold appearing at those three crucial moments. The beginning, the middle, the end. It's the stage for public judgment and private revelation.
The use of light and darkness also stands out. Light for truth, exposure, darkness for secrets, sin. It mirrors their internal states.
And the whole story works as a moral allegory, doesn't it? Hester, representing resilience. Dimmesdale, hidden guilt. Chillingworth, revenge. The setting, the atmosphere, it all contributes.
Plus, that third-person omniscient narrator lets us inside everyone's head, which is so crucial for a story about internal conflict. We know their secret thoughts, their torments.
We see the hypocrisy, the hidden struggles, the motivations. It adds immense depth.
So when you finish the book, what's the emotional residue? What stays with you?
For me, it's a mix. Melancholy, definitely. Empathy for Hester, certainly. A kind of frustrated pity for Dimmesdale. And just a chilling feeling about Chillingworth.
Yeah, indignation, too, at the society's cruelty. It makes you really question things, sin, justice, what redemption even looks like.
It pushes you away from easy answers, from black and white thinking. Is Hester, living openly with her sin, actually more virtuous than Dimmesdale, the saint hiding his?
It suggests that maybe true goodness lies in honesty, even when it's painful. And the humanity is complex, a mix of light and shadow.
Exactly. It encourages a more empathetic view of human failing, I think.
So reflecting on it all, this deep dive into the Scarlet Letter really underscores that integrity isn't about projecting perfection.
No, it seems to be about the courage to face your own truths, however difficult and however society might judge you.
And its core questions about conscience versus conformity, secrecy versus honesty, they still hit home today, don't they? Makes you think about the scarlet letters people might still bear, seen or unseen.
Absolutely. It challenges us to think about redemption, judgment, and the burdens we all carry.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Katra Foundation.